Okay, we have three microphone attendants coming up and down the aisle. So if you would, you know, just raise your hand and then we'll get them up to you. So, okay. All right. Andrew?
Can you hear me? Yes. So just talking about where the company is going, you highlighted the growth, you highlighted capital allocation. But in one of the presentations, you've noted that, you know, the pace of Six Sigma change, you haven't seen this in over a decade. So could you care to quantify the impact of Lean Six Sigma, simplifying the supply chain, you know, X the ERP system over the next 5 years? What is the opportunity?
Well, I think, first of all, when you, as I said, when I laid out that program, we have had a history of Six Sigma in the company since early 2000. So we have a good understanding of the normal lever relative to the output per belts. When I took over 2 years ago, we started to reinforce the importance of Lean Six Sigma, specifically into manufacturing. And we have added black belts during this period from 360 to almost 475. And the average for a black belt in the company, going back the last 10 years, has been around 800,000 per belt. So, and what we did was we focused at the end specifically on manufacturing. And I think you saw as last year when we talked about this year plan, we talked about $1 billion in terms of benefit in total into Lean Six Sigma. So we are now ramping that up. And as I show on that chart, we have an increase of around 10% of belts as we move forward. So we, I would say we are type of in the beginning of reinvigorating Lean Six Sigma. We do it very specifically into manufacturing. And one of the big opportunities for us is to improve cost of goods sold, where we are slightly above 50%. I think over time that a good objective for us is to get that below 50 in order for us to be competitive. And in some businesses, like a consumer, need to be even lower because that model is different. In terms of the ERP system, as David talked about, and I made some comments, that fully implemented, that's like a $500 million US dollar benefit in margins and half a billion in cash as we have executed that over long term. So the way I would look upon it is that you have a shorter term benefit of the Lean Six Sigma, and we are really accelerating that. And as Brad said, as you know, Brad was our vice president for Six Sigma when we started out. We are focusing a lot on it. And I would say, to be honest, we are type of in the beginning of it, right? So we are focusing more on it. We're ramping it up in all businesses. But you should see shorter term some benefit there. And then ERP is a little bit longer term as we roll it out.
Just to follow up, you know, so you mentioned cost of goods sold. At this point, can you share any targets as to how much lower this can go, or do we need to wait until we get a better sense of where it is?
I think you should wait a little bit, right, you know, before we give you a figure on it. But as you have seen, the way we take the company here, we take it in a very good methodology, I think, in terms of addressing certain point. And we appointed Chris Holmes a year ago when we realigned the organization to take on the whole area around supply chain. I would like to give him and us a little bit more time before I shoot out and target, because I would like to be both realistic and be very transparent with you when we do it, so we can follow it as we go, quarter by quarter, year by year, versus just shooting out a figure that we not can stand behind. So I hope you appreciate that, Andrew.
Steve.
Thanks very much. Really interesting to see the confidence displayed by the choices around capital allocation today and what that says about the business model. But it also raises the question for me that when you show your market opportunities that even excluding consumer look to me to add up that total addressable market to over $400 billion. And then if I throw consumer, I'm in the trillions of dollars. So it seems like you're you're penetrated now at about 7% by that definition. And you're taking R&D up to 6%. Why stop there? And is it related to the link between the MPVI and your core growth over time, that sort of not yet following that very strong MPVI improvement? Or how should we think about that?
You're talking about MPVI specifically?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, as you saw, MPVI, we have that now it's 37% in the five-year plan, where we before talked about 40. That is, I would say, a direct outcome of that the quality is much higher. We have much more granularity into our processes and understanding much better. So for me, that's not a concern relative to that's 37 versus 40, even if that's not what you ask. But I would like to make that comment, as that is a change relative to the objective. I think the other thing, as we roll out from historically 5.2 to 5.5, closer to 6, which we do step by step, we invested $50 million last year. And just the rollover of that will be like $70 million this year. I think we plan for 100 as we go. They all in type of disruptive technology, so they will take longer time. But I think, for me, 6% look like and feel like a good figure. And I will also say that investment we do in manufacturing feels like a good figure, right, in terms of around 5%, because that's based on our business model. And I think it's important to really understand our business model and the strength, because many times we are talking about research and development as the heartbeat of the company, and it's important, and it is. But I can tell you also the way we are able to execute our plan in order to connect it with manufacturing capabilities is really, really a strength. So I would say at this point in time, I am, based on the big potential in the market, it's not only research and development that will drive that. I think the improved commercialization capabilities will help us a lot. And I show that today that we have, I will not say improved it, but we have clarified it in terms of the two processes. But now even more important to get an even more effective commercialization process. And we announced Jesse Singh as the new vice president last week, only focused on sales and marketing, which is commercialization. So I think there is still a huge opportunity for us with what we have. So it's not only for us to come with new technologies and new product in order to penetrate this accessible market for us.
And then on the M&A side, when you talk about those multi-billion dollar acquisitions, are you primarily targeting the large growth bubbles, or are you also thinking consolidating acquisitions now is a big part of that?
I think, as I said in that presentation, you should think about it in type of the heartland and push forward categories as the primary objective for us. That's what it will be. It will not be in businesses under strategic review, and it's very unlikely in these businesses in transition. However, we did one, which was FS Tech, was done in for one business that was in transition, which was traffic safety system, and then security system was under strategic review. So combining the two internally gave them better relevance in the market, reduced the cost, and then gave them a new capability. But the way to think about it, I would think about heartland and push forward.
Okay, very good questions. We have 30 minutes and lots of hands, so maybe going forward, one question per. If we have time, we'll come back to everybody else. So, okay. Krim?
Yeah, I have a question on the automotive market. If, and that's a hypothesis, but if we had a larger penetration of electronics and also electric vehicles, but maybe more electronics, which is maybe more relevant right now, and also sensoring and those sort of things. Should we expect, is that a positive for 3M in terms of content? Or how do you think about this particular market from that perspective?
Yeah, we will have Brad Sauer give the comments
sure.
on that.
Great question. The short answer is whenever there's shifts or dynamics going on, it's a positive for us because we can literally dig into the 3M technology platforms and find some way to help those automotive OEMs do better. So the ones you mentioned, the electrification of vehicles, for sure. We have a full suite of technologies that we're working on, some near term, some longer term. But our automotive business consistently outpaces growth in that industry because we do exactly that. We lock onto those trends, help them differentiate, which they're desperately trying to do. And then we do it on a global basis. Our ability to cover those folks globally is unparalleled. I mean, they're literally now, you know, designing these vehicles, you know, real time across three continents and manufacturing moving everywhere. And so when we take our innovation and our global teamwork, and that's what enables us to drive really good results in that business. So all those trends are wonderful. We love them. The more, the better.
I think it's like, you know, we talk often consumer electronics, but it's actually mobile electronics, right, which is an opportunity for us when we get it right.
Shannon?
Yeah, thanks. Can you just talk a little bit about what drove this decision to add the top-down component to the acquisition methodology and also the improvements you mentioned about the integration process, just a little more color on what you've done there?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, first of all, if you think about 3M as an enterprise over more than 100 years, it's based on entrepreneurship and it's based on empowerment, if you like, right? And it worked very, very well. So I think we are very pleased with that. One of the strengths of the company is that each division is the closest to each market and at the same time can capitalize on the strength of the center of the company. So it's very powerful. And I think historically we have split up businesses as we went in order to get them smaller, more focused in order to capitalize on growth. Now, I'm a believer that in some cases you do that, you split them in order to be more focused for growth, but I'm maybe more a believer that you need to be relevant in the market. So by combining, you will get more strength in terms of relevance and power in the front line and reduce your back office and SG&A cost, if you like. So if you think about that from a historical perspective, that was a natural way for us to roll up acquisitions. Everyone was relatively smaller and have direct instinct relative to that market. The disadvantage with that was if there is something that you can capitalize on broad base for the company, you will miss it in a system like 3M. So that was what we tried to address, to look upon it based on the portfolio work we did, to say where is bigger spaces for 3M that will go over multiple divisions and maybe multiple business groups. And I think where we stood was we were okay if you were in a business group, but I would also like to see if there's something that we can do across business groups. So that was the change. So it's I would say it's more to add to the process than take away. So that's the answer to that question. Relative to to the integration team, we have done many acquisitions during the last 5, 6, 7 years or so. But what we did not have was type of the help and support from the center of the company. So every time you do an acquisition, and you don't do them every quarter or every year, you type of start all over again. And we were concerned as a team that we were not able to integrate them fast enough and get return to you and to the shareholders fast enough and be effective in a better way. So we decided to form that team, hired some individuals from outside and put that core team together. And we start to, it's like a sport, you start to practice them, right? So they start to practice on a couple of acquisitions that we did last year, but also some that we have done before in order to test the model. And as I said to some of you earlier, you know, I am and David and the team here, we feel now that we are ready to go. That team is ready with a playbook that they can replicate for whatever business this is. So the business is still responsible, but they have one place to go in order to get help and support exactly what they need to tick off as you go. So I think the way we have worked the system is we feel good about it as we move ahead.
Jeff.
Thank you very much. Perhaps for David, want to kind of dig a little bit into kind of your thought process on operating leverage, incremental margins sure. in your forecast. I mean, obviously the 2014 walk has kind of all the noise stripped out so that, you know, that 20 to 50 cents is a core number. That looks like kind of mid-25s type incrementals, which is low on your gross margin rate. And then if I kind of take that to the multi-year also, I mean, if you get a point from tax and two or three from repo and a point from M&A and a point from pension, I got 5 or 6% earnings growth before, you know, operations relative to a 9 to 11 forecast. So that also seems like you're really assuming very little core operating leverage. Is there a structural reason why we should expect that? Is there, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on the front end of the business. Is there leakage on the back end? Is there something that we're missing in that equation?
Yeah, I guess I would make two comments on that. One is we don't see a deterioration in terms of the operating leverage we produce from incremental organic growth. So we typically see that develop in the 30 to 40% range of incremental revenue, and that we've seen through this year, that we expect to continue. The second point is, I think what you observe is that we do have some identifiable means to support earnings growth. And the way I view that is, I think what it does is it gives us a very solid means to achieve the 9 to 11% vision that we have.
Okay. Dean.
Thank you. A question for David. I'd be interested in hearing about how the new capital structure has been stress test. The point here is that you're taking U.S. cash balances down, you're adding leverage, and there's a lot of people in this room that have memories of what went on in 2008, 2009. So my sense is you must, with rating agencies, gone through a stress test. And as you mull the answer to that, the idea here is that you all don't have big earnings visibility from a late cycle backlog, and you're top line sensitive to international industrial production, that multiplier effect that 1.5 times historically. So you don't have a lot of earnings visibility typically, and you're adding more leverage at and be interested in hearing, you know, how you thought through the stress test.
Sure, it's a good question. I think you can imagine, given the very successful business model the company's operated with for quite a long time, that we wanted to take a due amount of thought and process to go through and really look at those types of decisions from many different angles and make sure that we also considered and involved the key stakeholders in making that decision. So certainly, quite frankly, one advantage we have is that there was a real life stress test that was placed on the business here as recently as 2008 and 9. And if you look at the structure of our business today, it's certainly very similar, if not more robust, than it was from an operating perspective at that time. So certainly we looked at stress testing the business not only in 2013 and 14, but also at the back end of the five-year period, by imposing recessionary-type conditions on the business after having further deployed. And it's quite obvious, as you would know, that we have plenty of flexibility to continually be in the markets to access capital, even in the event that we move further along the curve to increase the leverage on the business, which, as you would know, is quite modest by any standard today. So we certainly took due care to look at that, because while we're taking an enhanced capital structure approach, it's not our intent to create inappropriate risk for the business going forward.
I'm going to look toward the back a little more. Joe?
Thank you. Perhaps you can comment on the M&A market today, and then David, as a follow-on question, if you were to make a multi-billion-dollar acquisition, you know, at what leverage would you be willing to bring the company to, and how would that change your capital deployment opportunities in that given year?
Yeah, so the first answer, in terms of the pipeline, it looks very good. And actually, as we've talked about, as you expand your view to be both the bottoms up and top down, naturally, we have a very broad spectrum that we can see across different end markets. So as you look at that also within the additional element of varying the size and looking top down, the pipeline looks good. So, you know, we feel good about it in a tougher market to transact, to be honest. And then secondly, in terms of how much leverage we'd place on the company's business, if you look at our plan right now, and you look forward to continuing to deploy capital as I've articulated, what we see in the base plan is that we could deploy, and we don't see that impacting, for example, our credit rating in the base plan. But what we would be comfortable with is if there were the right opportunity strategically, the company would be prepared to accept an adjustment in our credit rating to pursue such opportunities.
Nigel.
So just one question, but maybe clarification first, David. The $500 million saving from ERP, the sourcing benefits that the ERP enables, is that part of that? Is that a subset of the $500 million, or is sourcing over and above the $500 million?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if you look at when I talk about the $500 million annually fully deployed, that would include incremental opportunities we create for ourselves by having standardized data, standardized product coding, having visibility across the enterprise. Indirect sourcing is enabled by that system's deployment. And in fact, some of that we're starting to see a little bit earlier. So, but inclusive in the $500 million would be the increment on top of what we achieved today. If you look at this year's sourcing, that's primarily driven by our traditional processes. There may be a little bit in there that's enabled by deployment.
So the ambition to do maybe potentially multi-billion dollar acquisitions, yeah. You know, I think of 3M as a federation, if you like, of, you know, billion dollar type companies. It implies that there's going to be maybe brand new spaces for 3M going forward. Is that the way we should think about this?
No, I don't think you should think about that as brand new spaces. I think we look upon our business model. We look upon the strengths we have and how we can integrate that into the current businesses. And we know that that is when we are most successful. So we need to make the leverage based on the real core components of our business, right, which is around manufacturing capabilities, around global footprint, around our branding, and around our technologies. So it's not in our mind at this point in time in a total new space. We will add into the business groups where we work today and leverage our strengths, which is very strong in all those businesses.
Yes, sir, down in front here.
On the larger acquisitions, I'd like to ask a question about how much, whether you think there's a choice, I think there's certainly a cultural heritage at 3M, and it seemed like you'll have a choice, if you're going to make a big acquisition, between a cultural fit and a higher price, or not a cultural fit and a lower price, and whether you have considered and have a bias as far as that goes.
We will like a low price and the same culture. That's the best. That's the best. That's the optimal we're shooting. But I would say that, as David talked about, relative to what we are willing to pay and the leverage and so forth, we will be very disciplined on that area. The other thing, when we do our due diligence, culture is important, and which is many elements, right? Ethics and so forth. And that need to really be hand in glove with 3M. Otherwise, it's not interesting for us. So culture is important. We will be very careful relative the multiples we will pay, because we have a responsibility relative to return to the shareholders. But it's important for us also, when you think about it, is our business model, right? Should be something that we can integrate into our business model that is very, very important. And I think the good thing now with the portfolio management work that we have done, we have now a good understanding of where to do acquisition and where not to do acquisitions, which I think is the starting point before you go into the other elements that you will find out in due diligence.
Okay. We'll take one more. Steve, go ahead.
So you talked a little bit about services in here, sort of peppered throughout, but services have not been a major platform for growth yet for the company, given the heritage. And can you maybe talk about, is that something that we should look towards in the future as taking on a bigger role across the business, or still something that's more ancillary to the growth platform?
Yeah, I don't think at this point in time is something that you can see a new business group around services. But you can see, and you already see it, that it's an element of building out some of the businesses, because things are changing in those areas. Like traffic safety systems is more coming more and more service element into that business. Health information system is another business, etc. So I think the important thing is that you need to be very close to your core business when you start to build out the business, and it's type of an evolution of the industry. And I think that's coming back then to the responsibility for each general manager and vice president, together with the EVPs, to come with that story in terms of why we should make those type of investment if it's something we do from outside, adding into the businesses. But I think it's more an evolution of how business is going.
Okay. Well, I'll wrap up. I just wanted to say thanks to everybody for coming. It's a long time to sit, but I really hope you got a good taste of where the company's going. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your support of 3M, and happy holidays to everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you.